This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. Joining us in studio today are Aaron Bishop, Outreach Specialist at the Oahu Invasive Species Committee, Kevin Hoffman, Administrator for the Plant Industry Division of the Hawaii Department of Agriculture, and joining us via phone is Casper Vanderwood, Research Manager at the Hawaii Ant Lab on the Big Island. Welcome to you all.
Good morning.
I'm so glad you were able to carve time out for this show today. You know, our discussion was prompted by the recent discovery of fire ants here in two Windward Oahu neighborhoods and the discovery of a plant bought at the Punahou Carnival. So maybe if we can start out with you, if you can let us know what's the latest. Do we know where these hitchhikers came from on this plant that was sold at the Punahou Carnival?
Yeah, just to kind of give you a quick background on it. In late February, the Hawaii Department of Agriculture was notified by a resident that they had they were being stung in their bedroom, and they traced it down to like ants coming out of a plant that they'd purchased at the Punahou Festival. So Hawaii Department of Agriculture sent staff out to confiscate the plant. We surveyed the house and surveyed the surrounding area immediately outside the house, and the only place that had the ants was the plant.
In the bedroom.
In the bedroom, yes.
In Kaimuki.
We, of course, contacted the Punahou Festival organizers and so forth, and have been working with them to do a trace back on where the plant came from. We've been unsuccessful so far, but we're continuing to work on that. In the meantime, we went out and tested the area of the school where the plants were staged and did not find any little fire ant there.
Well, you know, I happened to see the photo that you folks released, and I know that it was described as a staghorn fern, and a couple people said, well, that's not really a staghorn fern. I mean, it's what's the exact name of it?
It's something that's sometimes called a fishtail fern.
Fishtail fern.
Although a problem with common names is there's other fishtail ferns that are out there, the things called. So it's related to a staghorn fern. But if you remember staghorn ferns, they're generally an aerial plant. We attach them to something and they put them on up away from the soil. This is a species that lives in soil, so that's why it was in a potted plant.
Right, but these ants do nest in trees, right, Aaron?
Yes, they do. They nest on the ground, they nest in shrubs, they nest in trees, and that's what makes it such a threatening species.
And Kaz, are you there on the Big Island? Can you hear us?
Yes, I am.
Yes, so this is really kind of a devastating pest, right? I mean, it's really affected the Big Island there.
It's probably one of the most awful invasive insect species that one could imagine here in Hawaii, and it does affect everybody, and it will. Whoever's not being affected now will one day be affected, and the impacts are really broad-ranging. So it impacts on people, businesses, the economy, the environment. It really does hit everybody from all different directions.
Now, I really hate ants. It's probably the one creature. I mean, some folks can't handle roaches, but I just don't like ants because I've been bitten as a little kid, and that's just, I've been traumatized by ants. But these have a painful sting.
You poor thing. I love ants. I think they're wonderful animals. Immensely interesting, except for the 12 or so that give us all the trouble. So out of the 15,000 or 30,000 different species of ants, there are about a dozen that can really annoy us.
Well, let's talk about the recent finds here on Oahu, because the Department of Agriculture put the alarm out because they were detected in a neighborhood in Kaneohe. Can you talk about that, Kevin?
Sure, yeah. A resident notified us that they had a stinging incident, and so we looked at the sample that they sent in and determined it to be little fire ant, and I think that was back in December when we first found it. So we went out and surveyed the area. Eventually, we determined that there were 11 properties that needed to be treated, and so we started that treatment in February. And so we just did the second treatment there last week.
And you also put out a release saying that you found it in a second neighborhood. How did you hear about that?
Again, a resident turned in a sample to the Hawaii Department of Agriculture and determined to be a little fire ant again. And this is in Hawaii Manu. And so we went out and, again, surveyed the area. We determined that there were 18 properties in kind of like two locations fairly close to each other that needed to be treated. So we did that also. We started first treatment there last week as well. And so we'll continue these Our treatment regimen is we go out and treat every 6 weeks, 8 times, in order to make sure that we've eradicated these populations.
And so, can you talk about how we can detect whether we've got these ants in our plants?
Sure. When you purchase a plant, the best thing to do is take it home, maybe put it in your carport or in your driveway. Take some disposable chopsticks or disposable coffee stirrers and put a little smear of cheap peanut butter on the ends of them. And then leave them in the plant for 1 hour. When plants are in transport, ants aren't going to be noticeable. So when you leave it for an hour, the ants will be attracted to the peanut butter. Then you go back and you carefully pick up the sticks, place it in a zip-top bag, and then freeze it overnight, and that's going to kill any ants that you catch. Now, you might catch different types of ants, but in order for us to be able to identify whether or not it is little fire ant, we have to have the sample and be able to look at it under a microscope. So that's why it's important to freeze the ants overnight, and then you can drop them off at any Department of Agriculture location. You can also contact your local invasive species committees, and we can help identify ants as well. And then on the Big Island, you can also contact the Hawaii Ant Lab.
So each island has basically wrestled with this problem, or are there islands that are ant-free at this point?
At this point, there's been no detection of little fire ant on Molokai, but there have been detections on all of the major Hawaiian islands.
And Kaz, what can you say about the Big Island? Because I was kind of saddened to read in the information that you sent over that they're kind of already established over there on the Big Island.
They've been here for at least 20 years.
Wow.
A colleague of mine first saw them here in Hilo about 20 years ago. But they had already been well established at that point. So they've been here for at least 20 years.
So it's not possible to eradicate them?
No, look, not on the Big Island. It is technically possible, but we've estimated the cost of being around about $1 billion. And my estimate of how successful that might be, if somebody cut me a check for $1 billion and said, go and eradicate little fire ants on the Big Island, I think I'd have a 20% or a 10% chance of being successful. So that's a lot of money for a very small chance of success.
And you mentioned that this really costs the Big Island like over $100 million each year, or what the projection is, right?
Yes, an economist, Dr. Donna Lee, and I worked on a few scenarios based on the rate of spread that we had been experiencing. And she estimated that the impacts of little fire ants to this island alone would be about $100 million a year. So it's awful. And now that we know how terrible this particular species can be to live with, we know that it's how important it is to try to keep it off the neighbor islands. So we invest a lot of effort in finding and eradicating new small infestations on neighbor islands. And that's been a really successful part of our program.
Now, you do have a meeting coming up on the Big Island, Friday, March 29th, I believe. Can you talk about that?
You're going to have to prop me there. I'm not sure which meeting we're talking about.
Well, I believe this is the Big Island Invasive Species Committee has a meeting set up from 6 to 7:30, I think, at the Discovery Harbor Community Center. So are we having these meetings just to kind of raise the awareness of our communities as to, you know, where we're seeing this?
Yeah, I guess there are several aspects to what is being done. And the Big Island Invasive Species Committee deals with all invasive species, as well as little fire ants on the Big Island. And when we deal with invasive ant species throughout Hawaii, so there's a little bit of a crossover there. Basically, the Big Island Invasive Species Committee does a lot of outreach, which raises awareness and also helps people with how to manage it. We do a lot of research and extension, and the extension part of it is really about training people or giving people the information they need to be able to deal with this problem in their own home or in their own business. So as little fire ants spread through the island, when a new neighborhood becomes infested, people are very concerned, and often they would invite either the Big Island Invasive Species C- committee or ourselves to come and talk to the residents.
Yeah, I'm looking at the flyer, and it says that this program is being made possible through funding from the Hawaii Tourism and the Change Happens Foundation. So obviously there's some economic drivers behind these community meetings. Are you aware of anything that's coming up on the other islands, on Maui or Kauai?
I'm not aware of any meetings or other events. I mean, we do these things almost on a daily basis here, so I'm really not sure about the Discovery Harbour meeting. On the neighbour islands, what we tend to do is work very closely with the invasive species committees that are which are there on each island, and we try to provide the technical expertise to deal with the little fire ants. And we actively manage most of the eradication programs that are happening on neighbour islands. And I can give you a bit of an outline on which island has what, if you like. I can give you some more detail.
Okay. And then, Aaron, talk about, I guess, the fact that this is really top of mind because we've had these incidents here on Oahu, and we've had some successes, right, in some of the other neighbourhoods here.
Yes, it is on the top of our mind because of these detections, and we really appreciate the media coverage because it helps raise the awareness. One of the obstacles that we have here on Oahu is that because people don't suffer the stings of little fire ant, it's really not on their mind. So that's where the outreach aspect comes into it. But the very first detections on Oahu, it was intercepted on hapu'u logs that had been delivered to Maui, and they did tracebacks. And from there, we started to do some early detection surveys, and then we started getting some reports. So the first detection was in Waimanalo, and it was an abandoned lot. That went through the treatment process. It was being monitored. Then there was some ants found in the top of a gunpowder tree that was on the property. So then it went into spot treatments. And since the end of the spot treatments, it's been over a year since there has been any little fire ant detected on that property. Now that property is moving into the monitoring phase, and they will continue to monitor that for years to come to ensure that this eradication is successful. The very next one that came up, this was in June of 2014, was the Mililani Mauka, and that was a resident who reported getting stung by ants, and he was suspect about it, so he sent in samples. The reason it was on the top of his mind to report that is because he saw the report on the Waimanalo infestation. Thanks to him, he reported this, it was detected, and then they went out to do surveys to find out the extent of the infestation. And it was 20 properties and a strip of green space behind the properties. So they were able to locate a larger infestation. It wasn't just one property. And they were able to do the treatment. They did the year-long treatment. And since the end of that treatment in 2015, there have been no ants detected. So thanks to Hawaii Ant Lab's research, they were able to develop a very effective and successful treatment program. So we have been able to do successful isolated eradications, which is where all of the other islands are at right now, and what Big Island is working on in specific areas to keep it from becoming island-wide and then statewide.
And Kevin, you had mentioned that there's a little different perspective on the little fire ant versus, let's say, the coconut rhinoceros beetle, right, as far as what kinds of resources we can marshal?
Yeah, sure. The little fire ant is native to Central and South America. It's become established in parts of the continental U.S., Florida, Texas, and, of course, now in Hawaii. So whereas the coconut rhinoceros beetle is not known to be established in any of the U.S. states. So that, from a federal standpoint, what that does is if for the coconut rhinoceros beetle, there are federal funds that we can tap into to conduct that that management project. For little fire ant, because it's already established in some states, that kind of dries up it prevents us from really accessing federal funds for this. So we're reliant on state funds and whatever else we can get from various research organizations.
Yeah, because I noticed just from covering these different issues with the pests, that there was a team, I think the USDA was able to dispatch running the money through the University of Hawaii's Research Corporation, RCUH, and they were able to, you know, get a team out there for the coconut rhinoceros beetles to put up the traps, to check the traps regularly. But we really don't have that pool of money, I guess, to tap into with these errands.
Yeah, that's true. And that's just the way the federal government fund is set up to fund projects. They're basically set up to fund management projects for things that are not established in the United States, trying to keep them out.
If you're just joining the conversation, we're talking about a little fire ants and the recent infestations discovered here on Oahu. You can join the discussion by calling 941-3689 or 1-877-941-3689 from the neighbor islands. Kaz, what can you tell us? You've worked in different places, Australia, New Zealand, other Pacific countries and territories. What's your sense of the spread of these ants?
Well, it's interesting. The first mention of little fire ants in science was actually in the late 1800s, and it was commented on as being a really terrible nuisance species, which, as Dr. Hoffman said, is from Central and South America. And it actually started being introduced in new locations back in the 1800s. In the Pacific region, that really started in the 1960s. And it slowly accelerated now, and quite a lot of Pacific nations now have little fire ants as well as Hawaii. We've been dealing with it here for over 20 years, I guess comparing it to coqui frogs, as Dr. Hoffman said, the federal folks don't consider it a priority because it's already present in the States. It's already present elsewhere, not giving so much trouble. And so it's really, it becomes a state issue once something's established within the U.S. And when you think about it, it's already established in Hawaii, so now it's down to which counties are infested and which are not infested.
We do have a call coming in from the Big Island. Sherry from Pahoa?
Hi. My question is, I've only lived here for about 3.5 years. I'm from the mainland, and on the east side, people are very anti-pesticide, anti-GMO. How much of that is participating in the inability to eradicate little fire ants? And then what about the economic situation of people who are trying to fight it, but they can't afford some of the some of the things you use, like Tango or the other stuff people use to get rid of little fire ants? I mean, is there help for low-income people renting or owning, and they have no resource other than nothing?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know, Kevin, do you want to take that? I mean, when there are reports of an infestation, the Department of Ag and the committees go out, right? And so what kinds of pesticides are we using?
I think Kaz would probably be the best person to answer that because
okay.
He developed the treatment method.
Okay, Kaz?
Okay, I missed the first part of the listener's question.
She's just concerned about what types of pesticides or chemicals we're using to kill the ants. What are we using?
Right, and the very first part of the question was that, did I hear a GMO question? Or?
Well, she was saying that there are a lot of groups that are anti-GMOs, you know, and just very sensitive about the use of pesticides. So how do you address that, or what are we using?
Okay, well, so we recommend the use of the most benign pesticides that will do the job effectively. And so we are very careful about what we recommend, and certainly the products that we recommend, like Tango, and Provant and some of the granular pesticides are amongst the safest pesticides on the market right now. So the products themselves are extremely safe, but that doesn't mean that everybody is prepared to use them. So different people have philosophical objections or other objections to doing certain things, and that's really up to them. Our response to that has been to focus our research right now on finding organic solutions, because we recognize that there are a lot of certified organic farms, especially on the Big Island, who are unable to use any kind of pesticides because then they would no longer be a certified organic enterprise.
That's a good point.
We're trying to work with those to find solutions for those industries. And I would imagine that people that are unwilling or reluctant to use normal synthetic pesticides, that they would avail themselves of those same solutions. So those solutions are, you know, we're working on getting those right now, but at the moment we don't have a surefire, effective, certified organic solution.
And can we talk about the funding? Because if we don't have that extra pot of federal money, I don't know what's happening at the legislature, what bills are in play at this point to help kind of fortify our borders and help deal with this problem.
Yes, funding's always been an issue, I guess, for the people that work in this part of the conservation industry. Agencies like the Invasive Species Committees, for example, and ourselves and many other similar projects are funded on a year-to-year or a project-to-project basis. So we are grant-bound, if you like. We rely totally on competing for and getting grants from both state and federal agencies. And the Department of Agriculture have been exceptionally generous to us, and we work very closely with them. And the Invasive Species Council here in Hawaii also allocates some funds to invasive ant work as well. But we also dip into or try to look for federal sources of money. Certainly from a plant quarantine perspective, it's very difficult to get a federal involvement in a response to little fire ants, because Dr. Hoffman described that fairly adequately. But some federal agencies have programs, funding programs, that deal with existing pests and what can be done about them. So we do get some funds from the feds. We also get some funding from local government. But essentially, we don't have any ongoing funding. Until last year, when two positions were created within the University of Hawaii system, and those will have ongoing funding, and we're in the process of filling those two positions at the moment. So,
now, I know the governor has made a point of, you know, biosecurity, that's really something that we need to beef up because it affects our economy and our sustainability, you know, because we're trying to get a lot stronger in that area. Anything else that you think, you know, we should be looking out for on the horizon with any legislation or support from the administration?
Very difficult to say. The administration, well, the legislature do whatever they can, and it's they're terrible decisions to have to make when they're formulating a budget, you know, what to support and what not to. So we roll with the punches there, and we hope that we can get funding to continue. But these permanent positions have been an incredible boost. It will allow us to very shortly put an additional staff member on the west side of Hawaii. So the Kailua Kona side is about an hour and a half or 2 hours drive from where we are. So we're hoping to place somebody there permanently in the next couple of months.
And will those positions be under your department, Kevin, in the agriculture department, or no?
No, they're
University of Hawaii.
Ah, University of Hawaii. Okay. Yeah. Any additional funding for the invasive species committees?
We're in the same boat. We work on soft funding. Most of our funding is delivered through the Hawaii Invasive Species Council, and they have developed a Hawaii biosecurity plan. And these projects that support that biosecurity plan are allocated some of these funds that have been given by the state legislature. Common theme is that there really is never enough money. But what we would like people to understand is what this biosecurity plan will do. So it's going to help bolster inspections, border inspections, pre-border, post-border inspections within the Department of Agriculture, and get their inspector numbers back up to where they used to be. So that's going to help detect and intercept some of these invasive pests like little fire ant from moving from island to island. And then if people really would like to support these initiatives, they can contact their local representatives and let them know that this is something that's important to them and that they would like to see funding go towards protecting our islands from some of these really harmful invasive species.
Okay, well, this is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. We're talking about little fire ants, and you can join the discussion by calling 1-877-941-3689. Stay with us. We'll be right back after a break.
Cheering on your favorite sports team can feel pretty great. But joy when your rival fails, when it makes no difference to your team, that can lead to sinister places.
People who are highly identified basketball fans were quite happy when the rival player for an opposing team got a severe injury.
Schadenfreude and envy on the next Hidden Brain from NPR.
This evening at 7. Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from Maui Chamber Orchestra, presenting the winners of its youth concerto competition Sunday, March 24th at the Iao Theater. Tickets at mauichamberorchestra.org and mauionstage.org.
Our caller, Sherry from Pahoa, had a second part to her question. She wanted to know if there was any help at all for residents, you know, when it comes to buying some of these pesticides or chemicals to help combat these pests.
Sure. Currently, there is no program in place to reimburse residents for those kinds of treatments.
So when there is a report of an infestation, then who foots the bill? How does that all work?
If it's an infestation on an uninfested island, you know, which is everything except the Big Island, then Hawaii Department of Agriculture takes the lead in responding to the report. You know, we go through a process of conferring whether it is a little fire ant or not. And then if it is, then we'll conduct a survey. We'll work with the Invasive Species Committee of that island to, you know, really they do a great job in outreach. And so we'll partner with them to try and reach out to the public at the same time that we're doing a survey to determine how big an infestation it is and where it covers. And then once we've determined we've basically found the edges of the infestation, we'll then go into a treatment program.
Okay, but as far as like the funding to be able to keep buying these chemicals to knock the populations out, I mean, what can you talk about that?
So on the Big Island, the Hawaii Ant Lab and the Big Island Invasive Species Committees really work closely with homeowners and communities. And there are two programs going on. So the Big Island Invasive Species Committee, they do have a program that works with communities. So they will get community members together, develop a plan on how they can best implement within their entire neighborhood to really combat these ants. So they provide logistical support and technical support. Sometimes, depending on the year and the funding, they might have funding to be able to reimburse people with the purchase of the insecticides. And then Hawaii Ant Lab has monthly workshops where people, and these are free to the public, people can attend these workshops and you can learn and get trained on how to treat your property, the proper mixtures to use, and the proper application. So both of those resources, Big Island Invasive Species Committee and Hawaii Ant Lab, do provide free technical guidance and training, but at this time, I don't believe that they have the funds to reimburse people for those pesticides.
Okay, we have a couple of calls on the line. John from Volcano, what's on your mind?
Hi.
Hi.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can. Do you have fire ants where you live?
No, here's the weird thing. I live up right near the town of Volcano Village, but I'm up against the Forest Reserve in Upper Fern Forest Estates. That being said, I believe I've accidentally caused my own infestation a couple of times by bringing mulch in here from down lower in the altitude. I'm up at about 2,700 feet. And they don't seem to like it much here, but I have infested myself. I've been here 15 years, right? Anyway, to make a long story short, they just about the time you think, oh my God, I got to do something, they're gone. And I go, what's that all about? Well, I'll tell you, part of the thing is there's lots of geckos up here, and they like to eat fire ants. And my house has my little cabin that I built 15 years ago is pretty much open air. and I've never seen a fire ant in my house, but geckos, they're welcome in my home. And anybody that thinks geckos or any of these lizard creatures like a skink or anything are bad, they're wrong. What they do is they eat those things. And another thing that people don't understand and are scared of are centipedes. Centipedes are not after you. They're after bugs, and they eat constantly. If you see a centipede on your property, leave him alone. He's not going to jump into your bed and try to bite you. What he's looking for is other bugs, spiders and stuff like that. Then there's a bunch of, listen, this is a natural way to just make this thing just, it ain't going to go away. And if you live at a lower altitude, because I've seen them down in Hilo in some bad spots, man, where it looks like it'd be impossible to get rid of them. But up here, if you live at a little bit of altitude, or you, listen, here's what I'm saying. Leave the natural fauna alone.
Okay, there you go. Good point. Kaz, you want to weigh in on that as far as the movement of mulch and, you know, movement of pests?
Yeah, I can weigh in on that if you like.
Go right ahead.
Okay, so John lives at 2,600 feet, which is actually quite high. And in that part of the world, things are much wetter and colder than they are down here. And so what we find is generally that little fire ants don't like that kind of habitat as much as they like it to be a little bit warmer and, you know, humid, but not too wet. So everything John says is probably right. I'd like to point out, though, that at lower elevations, so 1,000 feet or less, that a heavily infested property, say you had a quarter acre house lot with a house, typical size house lot in town, then you probably have 20 million ants on your place. And you need an awful lot of geckos to deal with those. So geckos aren't really a solution. But everything he says about, you know, trying to leave the other species intact is all good advice.
Well, I like geckos. I'm partial to geckos, so if I have a few.
Yeah. But essentially, little fire ants will outcompete anything else in the environment and eventually will chase it out, chase it away, or eat it. So at some point, in areas where the habitat is favorable, you know, those natural enemies just can't cope just with the numbers. And that's what makes this ant a particularly disturbing pest to have.
We have another call, this time Jim from Honolulu. What's on your mind? What's your question?
Hi there. Back in 1989, I was surveying a lot that we had purchased up in Waipio Gentry. And without knowing it, I knelt down in shorts on what must have been an ant pile. And I had 21, I counted them, bites, little white-topped heads they produce, hurt like the devil. And so my question is, is that necessarily a fire ant? Are fire ants, if an ant bites, is it necessarily a fire ant, or do we have other ants that bite here on Oahu?
Who wants to take that question?
I can. So we do have another type of fire ant. It's called the tropical fire ant. It's been here since the 1800s. The thing with tropical fire ants is they're definitely not the same as little fire ant. Tropical fire ants are generally bigger. They live in very sunny, hot, dry places. And most of us who've ever been to the beach or at a park have been stung by these just because you're standing near them. So they are aggressive. They do sting. And you do get very painful welts and bites. The thing with tropical fire ants is that they do live in a different habitat than little fire ant. Little fire ants like it where it's damp and shady, so they're really going to love Hawaii and especially a rainforest, which is concerning. But tropical fire ants prefer the hot, dry climates, and they are the ones that you'll see generally building the mounds on the ground. So there's over 50 species of ants in Hawaii right now, none of which are native. So if you're concerned about what type of ant you have, our best recommendation is do the peanut butter chopstick test. Send us your samples so that we can identify the ant. And it's a really great way to find out what ants we have here. And we will let you know what kind of ant you have.
Okay, and we have another call. This time, John from Pune. Good morning.
Yes, can you hear me loud and clear?
Yes, we can.
I got a jet going overhead.
No, we can hear you.
I mean,
Helicopter. Yes, you have problems with that over there.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I live in Lower Poonan. I've been here about 20 years. I've seen the fire ants come in here. They weren't here the first 10 years I was here. They're here now. And they're not going to go away. I live on the edge of a forest reserve, and there's thousands of acres behind me, and the place is covered with them. And I use Talstar to eradicate granular insecticide. I've managed to push them away from my house and keep them on the perimeter of my property. I pay for it myself. Cost me about $100 a year. I spread the granular myself, and that's how I deal with them. I keep them away from me, but you're never going to eradicate them unless you fumigate the island.
Okay. Well, that's a good point. Do you have any experience with the ants affecting any of your animals, let's say, that you might have on your property?
Oh yes. I have several. I have a couple of cats that have blind spots in their eyes, and I used to have a rescue center for parrots. I have about 12 large tropical birds, macaws and cockatoos, that I don't breed or run a business out of. I just run a rescue center for them, but I'm getting older and I can't handle it anymore. But I have to constantly keep pesticides around them, and I can't kill my, they're the canary in the mine. I can't kill my birds treating the fire ants, so I have to keep them away from me.
And Aaron, can you talk about the effects of these ants on, you know, other animals?
So little fire ants have been connected to blindness in animals, especially the animals that stay outside. They have been seeing an increase in eye damage. Little fire ants are attracted to the soft body parts of animals, the moisture in their eyes. And unlike people, we can feel things crawling on our face towards our eyeballs. Animals can't do that. And so when the ants get towards the eye, the animal will try and paw them away or blink, and that's when they get stung. And so when you have animals in a place that's heavily infested, you're talking about little fire ants on the ground, little fire ants in the shrubs, little fire ants in the treetops. These ants are going to rain down on the animals, and they do this to people too. But that's why animals are so susceptible to the eye damage. Also, little fire ants are attracted to pet food. So they're going to be around the dog food dishes, cat food dishes. And then other places where little fire ants are heavily infesting areas, they're actually seeing blindness of wild animals, so pigs and chickens. So this is especially concerning to pet owners. And so this is another reason we want to promote people to do these testing of their property every year.
Well, what about pasture land? Because, you know, we do have, you know, cattle, horses on the Big Island, donkeys. I mean, are we hearing any reports about that? Do you know anything about that, Aaron, or Kaz?
Yes, I can help in on that. Generally, we don't see a lot of impact on those grazing animals, because mostly those animals will be in parts of the landscape that are sunny and open, where there's grass, and that's not a good habitat for little fire ants. Little fire ants like to be in the shade, where it's a bit more moist and warm and lacking sun. So farm animals, especially grazing animals, don't encounter little fire ants nearly as often as what some other animals would. So we haven't seen that much. I have seen eye damage in pigs, and other wild animals that that live under tree cover, but grazing animals generally aren't that heavily affected, simply because there aren't any ants in their habitat.
And there's really no way to get a handle on how many animals are affected, right? I mean, there's no reporting requirement. It's just probably all anecdotal.
It's very difficult because although you know, I would make the connection between eye damage and little fire ants. Science, the broader discipline of veterinary science and biological science, the jury is still out on whether that is causality, whether the little fire ants are actually causing that damage. I'm convinced they are, but at a scientific level, at a broader level, there are many people who are not convinced, and we don't have direct evidence to prove it. So it's a very complicated situation where we have domestic pets that are, you know, that are clearly in suffering from this problem, and we have a strong suspicion what's causing it, but we don't have a direct causality. So it's, although I can say that in my opinion I'm convinced that there is a link, I don't have any direct evidence that I can back that up with.
Are you in contact with the veterans on that island?
Yes, I am. Yes.
And what are they seeing in their clinics?
The clinics in places where there are lots of little fire ants, mm-hmm. most if not all of the veterinarians would have a similar opinion to mine. But the Hawaii only has one veterinary ophthalmologist, and I don't believe that she agrees with it. So she's an expert on animal eyes, and she doesn't believe there is a link. I disagree with her, but I just need to point out that there are other opinions out there on this particular thing. So it's a very difficult thing to try to put numbers on, but at a rough guess, in areas like Lower Puna and places where that are heavily infested, maybe about a third of domestic pets would have some form of eye damage, and mm-hmm. it's my opinion that most of that eye damage is being caused by little fire ants.
Okay. Well, if you're just joining us, our guests in our studio are Aaron Bishop with the Oahu Invasive Species Committee and Kevin Hoffman, Administrator for the Plant Industry Division of the Hawaii Department of Agriculture. And joining us via phone is Kaz Vanderwood, Research Manager at the Hawaii Ant Lab. And we should note that, there is an upcoming meeting on the Big Island to talk about fire ants. And one of our listeners also flagged that on Saturday, March 23rd, there will be an invasive species and biosecurity event here on Oahu at the William Richardson School of Law. And I believe that's 9 o'clock to noon, talking about, what we can do to kind of fortify our borders and deal with pests like this. Anything else that you think that would be important to underscore for our listeners out there at this point?
I would like to point out that this all sounds very terrible, and it is a serious pest, but I really don't want people to walk away with throwing their hands up and thinking that this is an unsolvable problem. We can prevent this species, this invasive species, from becoming established statewide. And even on Big Island, there are places that are little fire ant free, and communities are working to keep it that way. So this is not a hopeless cause, and we've had successful localized eradications.
Anything else from the Department of Agriculture's point of view?
Yeah, and the public's involvement is critical because they're really the eyes and ears. Hawaii Department of Agriculture, Hawaii Ant Lab, Invasive Species Committees, they have some staff, but this is something where the ant is extremely small, very difficult to see. It also it's very slow moving, and it doesn't spread very much on its own. So it's something where you can't just put out a trap and draw the ants from a mile away, invasive moths and fruit flies, stuff like that. You have to go there right to the site and find the ants. So obviously there's not the staff available among the participating agencies to do this statewide. So that's where the public's health is critical. The public are the ones who are out there. At their residences, at their businesses, in the wild areas, they're out there. Their awareness that this could be there, and then their cooperation in taking samples and then sending it into invasive species committees or the Hawaii Ant Lab or Hawaii Department of Agriculture is critical. That's how we found the infestations on Oahu.
When you talk about sitting there on your couch watching mm-hmm. TV and getting bit, or being in your bedroom in your bed. I mean, that's pretty crazy. And really, I guess we need to underscore that it's not just plants, right? They can come in and hitchhike off of or in on your car, let's say, if you're moving a car from one island to the next, or furniture.
Yeah, absolutely. Maui had to track down a used vehicle that got sold, and it was infested with little fire ant.
Really? Was that recently?
Yep, that was, when was that? It was in the past 2 years, but they had found out that one of these, trucks was just sold, but it was infested with little fire ants. So they spent some serious time tracking down this truck so that this truck would not be a vector to spread little fire ants to even more locations. So really, it can be anywhere. Because it can be anywhere, that's why we encourage people to do these surveys once a year. That way, if you find it, you're going to make sure that it's a small population and we can get rid of it.
We have a call coming in from Kalapana, Giovanni. Are you there?
Yes.
What's on your mind?
Yeah, I have two questions. One, I think directed to Gus. One is about the use of spinosad. I don't know if they experimented, which is alleged to be a fungus or something that the fire ants eat and then explode, actually, in their belly and actually kills them. I don't know if they experimented with it. And then the other thing I want to mention is that strangely enough, we have a cat around here that at some point he had one eye cloudy that we think was about fire ants. We're not sure. But anyway, strangely enough, this eye just healed by itself. We didn't do anything to it. So I don't know if that is something regarding to the fire ants or not, but that's what happened.
Kaz, do you want to take that question?
Yes, I didn't hear the product that the gentleman was asking about, whether it might be useful or whether we'd done some research.
Spinosad. Something like it was a fungus,
yes,
that somebody was experimenting, but I didn't follow through. So I don't know if you guys are aware of that product or not.
Spinosad.
Yes. Well, just for other listeners who might not be aware, spinosad is a derivative of a naturally occurring fungus that's been used in pest control fairly broadly for many insect species, and it's certified as an organic product. It's not especially good on ants, but we are experimenting with it because at the moment it's the only thing we have identified that might be useful. There are some dose issues with that particular pesticide. If I can explain, if an animal gets a little bit too much, they die before they get back to the nest. And the idea behind baits is that we use the worker ants to find the bait, take it back to the nest and share it with the rest of the colony. So if they die before getting back to the nest, it's not really working very well. And if there's just a little bit not enough active ingredient, then those worker ants that take up the spinosad won't actually die. They won't get sick, but they'll recover. So dosing is a very critical issue, and it's difficult with this particular chemical to do that. But we're looking at a range of organic options that may be useful, and spinosad certainly is one of them. There is a related product called spinodarin, which we're working with as well. So there will be hopefully some movement on that side of things. But at the moment, there's nothing that I can hand to someone and say, here is an organic surefire solution.
And are these different treatments, are they expensive?
No. On the whole, and I know this came up earlier, for the average resident who has a normal size house lot, you know, 10,000 to 15,000 feet, the cost of the chemicals is about $100 a year. And most people can afford that. If you have a larger property, then obviously it becomes more expensive. And for those people, it certainly is an issue. But what we've identified as the main issue is that people are not that certain as to how to use these products properly.
And right, so you've got you've got the programs to help teach people, and
exactly
free programs,
and that knowledge is I believe is tremendously useful, and it minimizes pesticide use, which I like because it looks after the environment, and people like because it looks after their wallet. So by finding a system that minimizes pesticide use and maximizes the benefits, we can have a situation where we're not harming the environment by using these chemicals, we're using them wisely and safely, and the cost for the average person is not that high. The costs are different for farmers and people with larger properties, and it certainly can be a problem. But on the whole, the cost of treating an acre of land once is about between $20 and $30. So if you have
not
a quarter of an acre and you treat it eight times, then you need $60 to $70, say $100.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's manageable. A second part to that question about if you have an animal that you think might be injured by fire ant. I guess the best thing is to just check with a veterinarian, right?
Check with your veterinarian. Yeah, entomologists are not experts on domestic pets, and it's much, much better to talk to a veterinarian who's qualified to deal with those sort of problems.
Okay, we've got about a minute or so left.
Final thoughts? We have a website with a lot of information for listeners that would like to find out more.
Yes.
And it's www.littlefireants.com. It's all one word.
Okay, and we will also have links on our website as well. Any other final thoughts in the little time that we've got left, Erin?
Yes, Kevin? And if people want more information, especially about what's going on each island, they can visit stoptheant.org.
Okay, and I know we do have the pest control line, right, reporting line that folks can also call in if they think they've got a problem.
Sure, there's a pest hotline, 643-PEST.
Okay.
and just to make it harder or more complicated for listeners on Oahu, you can call the Hawaii Ant Lab staff directly on Oahu. We have two people there that work very closely with the Department of Agriculture. They've been there for 4 years, and their job is to check all the high-risk places to see if fire ants are present. So they've actually been very quietly in the background, working away, eradicating small infestations.
All right. Well, we'd like to
You can reach them directly on 824-1366.
Okay. Well, we'd like to thank our guests, Kaz Vanderwood, Research Manager at the Hawaii Ant Lab, Erin Bishop with the Oahu Invasive Species Committee, and Kevin Hoffman, Administrator for the Plant Industry Division of the Hawaii Department of Agriculture. And we'd like to thank you, the listener, for joining us on today's show. And again, you can go to our website, hawaiipublicradio.org, and we'll have links to all these numbers and websites that you can check out. If your call didn't make it on the air during today's discussion, contact the talkback line. Leave your comments. That number, 808-792-8217. You can also send us an email at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. And if you want to listen back to today's show, check out the Conversation podcast at hawaiipublicradio.org. I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us tomorrow for The Conversation.